Mario Sunday Roast on Today FM
with avantcard.ie. With personalised pricing, our loan rates are made for you.
Welcome back to Mario Sunday Roast. Now, my next guest is an author, a broadcaster, an actor, a prolific playwright, a raconteur, and this kept coming up in my search for him as well, a sex symbol.
No.
Michael Harding, welcome to Mario's Sunday Roast.
I thought you were going to say a holy man.
Well, maybe you are, but what's the sex symbol thing?
A sex symbol, you couldn't.
Mm. Well, this is what I've kept seeing.
Yeah. Well, you should see me body, all right. It's nice. I do look at it an odd time in the mirror in the bathroom when the lady wife is not there.
I've always enjoyed you talking. Really?
I enjoy you too.
Oh, thank you.
You're brilliant.
Oh, very, very kind.
Vincent Brown, you were a master.
Well, it's not about me. I'll get to Vincent Brown later.
Rosenstock, your real name?
Yes, it is.
Where does it come from?
It's a German name. My grandfather was in the German army.
Oh.
And he fought for the
First World War.
Second World War.
Oh.
Not that old, Michael.
Right. You're an honest man.
Yes, he fought for the Germans in the Second World War.
Oh, did he?
And
yeah.
He met my grandmother.
My father's granny was a Polish Jew.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of relations ended up badly.
Yeah, well, yes. Well, my grandfather
met Mario.
Yes?
Go on.
My grandfather met my grandmother on the island of Jersey.
Ah,
she
yeah.
She was a nurse
yeah,
from Math yeah. and I. She was a nurse from
Lovely.
Math and I. And the Germans had occupied
that's right,
Jersey.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And there was that.
And
there's a movie about like that. Isn't there
is.
There?
Yeah, there would be.
Movie.
And then he came home to Ireland. He was a doctor. So he came home to Ireland, to Kilfinnan in Ireland, and set up his practice there and had a number of children, one of whom was my father.
Okay.
Anyway, listen, I've always enjoyed you talking on television, The Late Late Show and Ray Darcy and radio and all this sort of stuff. And I've enjoyed you because you seem unfiltered. Are you?
God, I don't know. What does unfiltered mean?
It means that it means that you're naked, Michael.
Well, I'm not naked here now.
No, but it means that you're able to share your feelings and thoughts. And
I try to, yeah.
Do you mind doing that?
I have no context. Like, do you know what I mean? Filter is a good word, isn't it? I have no way to filter who I am because I'm so confused. So that's the genuine truth. Like, I try loads of religious stuff. People say, have you found meaning in life, Michael? And I said, no, sure. If you were trying to find meaning in life, you wouldn't be doing religion. Like, meaning in life is ideology. Meaning in life is, you know, gender politics or nationalist politics or something. Religion is for the completely confused and bewildered, right?
In other words, you.
Yeah.
And so, do you get more confused as you get older?
You can't filter that. Like, you can't filter confusion. And you can't pretend confusion.
Do you get more confused as you...
I do, yeah. Yeah, I do. But I get more, I tell you, I've done in my life, a woman made me happy. My relationship with my beloved has changed me over 35 years. But so also has the experience of Buddhism, the experience of Christianity, and the experience of psychotherapy. Okay. So by investigating who I am, I have become more at peace. But the answer that I found, I'd say, is tied up in a lovely Japanese phrase: when you name the bird, you cease to experience the song. So every time you name who you are, it's like a skin that has already fallen off the minute you name it.
Mm.
So you're constantly in this state of be here now, is a state of confusion. It's a state of actually not knowing and not being able to name.
And which is good.
Yeah, and then you hang on to stories like a drowning man hangs onto a raft. And then that raft, you see it sinking and you feckin' jump for another raft. And that's a drowning man telling stories. I'm a drowning man telling stories.
But the word confusion in the English language has a pejorative sense.
Does
to
it?
It does. To be confused is not seen as something that's good. But yet
that's in modern culture.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
but you're saying that it is a good thing.
It is, of course.
Let it
is.
Go.
Yeah,
be lost.
Be lost. Oh, yeah, be lost. Let go. Stop gripping the world. I met a woman, for example, on the top of Skellig Michael, and she was in a beehive hut, and she was meditating, right? Cross-legged, half lotus position, hands on the tops of the knees, thumb and forefinger closed, absolutely the perfect image. And she had a little candle lighting in front of her. And I couldn't resist saying to her, you're not supposed to light candles in here. And she said, I can't do this without the visuals. But she kind of looked at me suddenly in a flash and said, would you ever fuck up? And then she went back to her meditating. Hmm. So like she was gripping the world, like, this is the meaning of life. This is the meaning, you know, Buddhism is the meaning, meditation is the meaning. Recce is the meaning, Christianity is the meaning, and you grip these things. And it's like you're going around with meaning, you know, as if there was a truth in meaning. There is no, you cannot name yourself. You can only open your heart to the universe, really, and fall into relationship with it.
The problem we have is, though, we're biologically sort of predisposed towards striving, getting, trying to label things, trying to see ourselves within the context of other things.
Yeah, we are. To
trying to
extent.
See you within the context of me.
Yeah.
Trying to see what relationship I have
with
you.
Well, that's perception. Yeah, that's perception. And we are dispositioned towards perception. And the Buddha philosophies will tell you that perceptions actually, there are four heaps of perceptions and we integrate them all together and we think that I'm here and you're there and we know what we're talking about. We actually don't. We're actually like a little insect on the table looking at us would have a completely feckin' different perception of what we are entirely. So perception, what we are really disposed to as human beings is relationality. That is the really big thing you get in religion or in psychotherapy. Relationality, you are in relationship to me. Like you're buzzing and I'm buzzing now in this moment, 99% because of the relational disposition between us. Mm. Everybody is like that. To go around not liking some people and loving other people, right? And they never check it out. But underneath that, you have the cosmos. And we have, in urban cultures, fallen out of relationship with the cosmos. We don't say, I love you anymore when we're looking into the garden.
Yeah, we've fallen out of love. Well, we've just fallen out of love,
yeah.
With everything, and including
and we're using
nature.
big templates that are kind of about who is the enemy, you know.
More so than ever these days.
Yeah.
And everything is a binary situation.
Exactly.
Your show is called On Tuesdays, I'm a Buddhist. What can people expect to see when they come and see your show, Michael Harding?
Well, nothing as heavy as what I've just said.
Okay. What's wrong with that?
I do 90 minutes of talking and I talk through the book. I read the book. The book is really the story of, let's say, the past couple of years where I was doing therapy because I'd had depression. In 2011, 2012. And I was doing that and getting benefit from it, but gradually I was getting bored with it and feeling I need more than therapy. I need to go back to prayer. And an icon appeared in the garden one day, an icon, like an image of the Virgin Mary. It was an icon that my lady wife had made in Warsaw. And she took it home. She said, I have a present for you. I was sitting on the patio. She said, here's a present. And I opened up this and it was an icon, like the image of Mary and Jesus, right? And I thought, well, would you give a bottle of whiskey to a dry alcoholic? You know, what are you doing? Like, this is bad. Like, I've spent 25 years doing Buddhism and therapy. Stay away from the old religious stuff because I used to be a priest. So I'm getting out of that, right? And then she gives you an icon. And I'm looking at the icon and I'm saying, well, I can't put it on the wall and call it art. It's not kind of in me. So I put it in a bookcase in my studio, which is like the shed at the back of the house that we put double glazing in. That's a studio. And I put it there and I started looking at it and I started trying to meditate in a Christian way. And suddenly I got sucked in like a man in quicksand and I got sucked into a whole lot of old Christian stuff again. I'm going around with beads and praying and meditating and going in and out of churches. It's just terrible.
And so this now has led to...
And that's what I tell on stage.
Yeah.
I tell the whole story.
Okay. We've asked you to pick a comedy clip and the comedian you've picked is...
Thomas Tiernan,
who you said you were related to.
Yeah, I'd be an uncle of Tommy's.
Oh, is that right?
I would.
A lot of people think you are Tommy Tiernan.
I wouldn't like to think Tommy Tiernan wouldn't be too impressed to hear you say that. I mean, Jesus.
But you are very similar.
Yeah, exactly.
You ruminate.
I'm 100 years older than him.
Yeah, but you walk around country towns, you walk around country...
Well, he's also a holy man. I think Tommy is a great saint. He's a great mystic of the Orthodox tradition. Unrecognised as yet. Maybe not even in this lifetime, but in many generations to come, they'll be revering.
Surely, there
icons,
is. Yeah,
they'll be icons of Tommy Tiernan.
I think so.
Holding a Bible in one hand and giving two fingers on the other.
if only he could be blaspheming himself, that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
He's a spiritualistic person. He's an empathetic person.
Yeah.
I think that's what shines through his comedy as much as any of the
jokes.
Yeah,
and I think comedy too, as you know yourself, it's a very holistic game.
Yeah.
It actually is. It's actually about death and it's about resurrection.
I think a lot of it is about kindness and gentleness.
Yeah.
And he exhibits or touches on those subjects a lot in his comedy. Here's a clip of Tommy Tiernan.
maybe I'm wrong, but I know things are tough right now. Things are hard. I've been followed around the country by four fucking empty houses demanding payment. You know, because I bought too many houses during the good times. Fuck, why wouldn't I? I bought a two-bedroom house in Dublin. Cost me £8 million. Why? Because it was going to cost £20 million the following day. I was going to make £14 million overnight. And the bank were here, take the money, take it. I was, are you sure? Yeah, there's loads of it, take it. But we went for it. You know, now economists are telling us that we fucked up the good times. And we're there, what did we do? What did we do? How did we fuck up the good times? And they're saying, by spending all your money. That's what we were supposed to do. That's why they were called the good times. You can't be saving your money during the good times, because then they're not the good times. Then they're the in preparation for the bad times. Times.
Have you gone to see him?
I have. I've done shows with him.
Oh, yeah.
I've once, a couple of times we did In Conversation together.
How did that go?
It went great, yeah. I'd say I learned a lot from him, but I learned everything from him, in a sense. His love of the audience, his conviction that going out there is not some challenge, but it's really an engagement of love. And I remember him saying one time that for him, one of the happiest times is sometimes when he's in a show. There's sometimes that it's like there's something opens up inside you. You don't know what it is. It's like an opening of the heart with the audience, and the whole energy or the momentum of the comedy takes on its own life, and you're kind of like there amazed that you're actually belonging in this moment of laughter. And that's in Tommy's voice. His voice is everything too, you know.
Yeah, he is terrific. Okay, well, my special guest this week is Michael Harding. Michael, stay with me for a little while longer, because after the break I want to talk to you about your heroes, your favourite scene from a film, and loads of other stuff. Back after this.
Mario Sunday Roast on Today FM
with avantcard.ie, offering Ireland's first personalised loan rate.
Welcome back to Mario Sunday Roast with me, Mario Rosenstock, and I'm here with this week's special guest, author Michael Harding. And Michael, I wanted to talk to you about public discourse, the way we discuss stuff.
Yeah.
The way we discuss, the way we argue.
Yeah.
On television, on radio, yeah, and in newspapers. What do you think about the quality of that public discourse now? I mean, personally, I see it as it's gone much more binary and much more yes, no, much more black, white.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of nuance and grey has been left aside.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why, you know, that's more, one of the things I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Finding peace in conversation,
yeah,
argument,
yeah,
and non-adversarial. And nuance, looking for nuance and greyness.
And I think that you're absolutely right, that it is binary, that it becomes like for and against every issue, right? And the kind of violent language that's used by both conservatives and liberals. Like, I've been as shocked by articles in the Daily Telegraph as I have in The Guardian, right? Like, a very strong language for or against whatever you're talking about, Brexit or Europe or this, that or the other, or Trump, right? And you're absolutely right that unless we find a middle ground. Now, my trick would be this. I would say, don't worry about the war, right? Like, if you kind of get knotted up about how ugly Trump is, let's say, and how violent and binary and extremist his language is, then you'll end up depressing yourself for the day. But the space for me is like the on position and the off position. It's like if you begin to look at public discourse as kind of a pantomime, you know, it's like a show on the stage at Christmas time. It's a bit of buffoonery. And then if in yourself, in your ordinary life, you kind of cultivate a private space that doesn't allow you to go in there, then you're not damaged by it. And gradually something more middle ground grows up. So where we get really damaged, and this is really where it is where the public discourse, the the pantomime on stage becomes internalised because we're reading too much social media or we're listening too much to the radio. Too much. We're listening, 8 o'clock in the morning, we're listening to news, but why do you want to do that? Like, put on a bit of music. Really find an off position.
Peter Casey thing was the recent binary,
yeah.
The binary situation,
yeah.
Whereby he seems to have touched on a nerve somewhere with people.
Yeah.
Yet it was seen through a poisonous lens.
Yeah.
People started seeing it through a poisonous lens. And they started going, yeah, well, he's this and he's starting this racist stuff, basically. Yeah. And people then immediately just forgot about anything he may have touched upon.
Yeah.
So in other words, it turned into toxicity straight away.
Yeah.
Whereas in actual fact, there was obviously something in what he said that wasn't just bound into racism, for God's sake.
Yeah.
That was touching on something that people were concerned about, yet people can't then talk about that.
Yeah.
Because to talk about it is immediately to be seen as toxic.
Yeah, yeah. But again, I think he knew what he was doing. He was throwing a petrol bomb so that it would create division. That's what the petrol bomber does. Throw the petrol bomb and then you'll get the street divided. So he threw the petrol bomb, and of course everybody got toxic. But I think his contribution was pernicious because it's like labelling your problem as somebody is the enemy. And you can interchange traveller for Syrian, for Kurd, for Englishman, for Irishman, whatever you want. But it's like really nasty. And what's his name? Casey.
Yeah, Peter Casey. Yeah.
He in previous cultures, he would be trounced by somebody with moral authority. Somebody, if it was a Christian culture, a Buddhist culture, somebody would come out. I mean, in the old days, in the 70s, the Irish clergy, the bishops, were very, very good and articulate on the importance of how love your neighbour meant travellers. They did research. Micheál McGrail did a great book on prejudice. Willie Walsh down in Ennis had, you know, everybody, bishops were really enlightened on that issue in the liberation theology period. And it was sad that there's none of them left to speak up and say, you know, Casey, you're a disgrace to any sort of Christian tradition.
Mm.
You know?
Okay. Movie or monologue, but you picked a movie.
I did.
Yeah. And what was it?
The Butcher Boy.
Pat McCabe.
By Neil Jordan.
Yeah.
But script and book and total core inspiration, magic. The work is Pat McCabe.
From around your neck of the woods.
He's South Ulster and I'm South Ulster. He's Monaghan, I'm Cavan. And just to show that me and McCabe wouldn't be butties, in the old days when Monaghan would lose a match to anybody, if they had to drive through Cavan on the way home, the women would come out in Coot Hill and jeer them as they drove through. So Cavan and Monaghan have a funny, there's like Cork and Kerry, you know, that kind of way. But I think that Pat McCabe's books express, like Paddy Kavanagh did, when Kavanagh wrote, I was a teenager reading his books and it made me a poet, to realise you can speak like me and be a poet.
Mm.
Wow. Well, McCabe kind of pushes the language to kind of a hyperbolic stretch of the imagination, which is actually true to how people speak in South Ulster. There is a surrealism in South Ulster that comes through in loads of beautiful stories that McCabe has written. But also, when it comes to the idea of the little boy, Francie, in the book, The Butcher Boy, and in the movie, it's like a beautiful, innocent story of a child and his faith. And to me, what I love about it and the scene I love in it is Francie talking to Theokotos, the mother of God, this kind of, you know, exotic 2,000-year-old intellectual fabricated myth of transcendent mother of all cosmos, right? So this is a big woman he's talking to. But she talks to him and he talks to her. And it's that kind of building everything into the idiom and colloquial language of South Ulster that is why McCabe is really a master writer.
Oh, stranger.
How are you, Francie?
I haven't seen you for a pair of years.
It's not that I haven't been thinking about you, Francie.
So what are you doing, Mrs? Still talking to the likes of me?
God loves every one of us, Francie. But you know something, Francie? It's a very special place in his heart for you.
Tell me something, Mrs. Are all the beautiful things gone?
No, Francie. They're all still there. Look, here's one of them.
It's like, are all the beautiful things gone? The broken Francie says. And when you think about our previous conversation about violent language and, you know, extremist binary discourse and how it really stresses us out now, it's like somebody in that culture thinking, you know, is all the beautiful things gone? And here's the mother of God talking like she was a 15-year-old girl in Loretta Cavan. Ah, no, Francie, just look out, it's still nice. And that I think that's really a masterpiece scene.
Yeah. Okay, you picked a hero. You asked people to come in and pick a hero.
God.
Who's your hero?
St. Patrick and St. Bridget.
All right. Well,
they'd be my heroes.
Go on, just explain that to me then.
Well, okay, I'm hoping next year to get an iconographer in Belarus to make me an icon of St. Patrick. And the reason is because St. Patrick and Bridget are revered in the Orthodox Church all the time. And they make beautiful icons. And in the icon of St. Patrick, they have the little shamrock. Now, I used to think, like, the way we were told it in school, sure, the man must have been on magic mushrooms or something. He was going around fucking with, you know, little shamrocks going on. Oh, God, is a shamrock, yeah. Man. Like, look, it's cool. Look, it's got three little ears on it. Right?
Yeah.
And then you start, I start going back. Like, I wouldn't be too much fond of the Roman Church at the minute. You know, it's not that I'm just more into the old Orthodox crack, right? Because it was Orthodox that came to Ireland in the 4th century, very early, from the monks in Egypt, the hermits. They came. And St. Catherine. In fact, in Ventry, they say St. Catherine is from Egypt. The Egyptian St. Catherine is buried in Ventry. Her coffin wouldn't sit down under the ground in Egypt. It kept coming up, so eventually it went out onto the Nile, came through the Mediterranean and came up to Kerry, right? Came in on the beach at Ventry, and all the Ventry people said, sure, that's no problem, sure, that's St. Catherine. Bury her. She wants to be at home in Ventry. And that's how close the Egyptian church at the time was to the monks, the hermits in Ireland, in the Erne or up in Donegal or down Columbkill or all the rest. So those links are very strong. And there was 400-500 years of that before the Roman church, through the monastic system from Rome, began to kind of say, well, we're actually the bosses. Now, the key difference was the Trinity, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit idea. That God was this triune. And this worked with the Irish because the Druids had already been doing triune, making squiggles on stones for about 1,000 years, saying, sure, there's three energies in the whole cosmos.
Yeah.
So when Paddy came with the old shamrock, they didn't think he was in magic mushrooms. They said, that's cool, man. Tree. There's tree in it. We get it. Yeah. And he just put names on them. So to me, everything that came in the Book of Kells, which is a kind of a language of iconography and must have come from somewhere. Everything that comes in the Irish syllabic poetry and then the music, the ancient chanting, which was the big thing in the Christian tradition in 4th, 5th, 6th century, then that comes into Shannos in Irish culture.
Mm.
And then it finally blossoms right through 12th, 13th, 14th centuries, maybe O'Carolan, they would call him the last.
Yeah.
The last of the bards. But the intrinsic link between all those women and men and the creative arts makes Bridget and Patrick my heroes. And she, Bridget, was the one not going round with the shamrocks, but actually going round opening craft schools and artistic schools and encouraging reading, literature and the study of the Bible.
Michael
so
Harding.
Extraordinary people.
Do you have a podcast?
I don't know.
You have can to I, get a podcast.
Would somebody send me one? What is a podcast?
A podcast is where you can just talk this
for
stuff.
Chickens, is it?
No, yeah, you can just say this stuff.
Yeah.
But unfettered, with no time.
That'd be no good at all.
Unfiltered and unfettered.
Jeez, that'd be like making everybody have to endure what the wife endures. That'd be cruel.
I think that's what people would love.
All right.
I think that would be
a great
idea.
The Michael Harding podcast. What is it? Oh, podcast. It's coming soon.
Yes.
Right.
And that's pretty much, well, I can't really, my brain can't actually soak up any more of you.
I love you, Mario. I really do. You're a lovely person, though. And I loved you on telly for years, and now I'm talking to you. It's lovely. It's great. I wish you were all here. It's just me and Mario.
Michael Harding, thank you very much. You've actually convinced me to come and see you on tour, and you're around Ireland, and you're going to be touring. All the dates on your website are all screwed up, though. So
No, they're not.
So where are you next?
They're dead
today,
right.
Today is Sunday, so
Letterkenny.
Letterkenny.
I'm in Letterkenny on Friday evenings, the 16th of November.
Okay.
And I'll be there in Nungrenyon at about 2 or 3 minutes past 8.
Well, it's lovely to talk to you, Michael.
Och, no.
I'm absolutely delighted. So Michael Harding, go up and get to see him up in Letterkenny now with Bunny and all the lads and all those fellas called Bonner and Boner and Bunny.
Oh, you're an awful hoo-ha.
You're a cute Calvin whore, so you are.
Great, you're Donegal gobshite, yeah. It's wild Wendy. Isn't it wild Wendy tonight?
We just fade out here while we go to the next record. Michael Harding, thanks very much.
Oh, fine hunk there.
Mario Sunday Roast on Today FM with Mario Rosenstock.
We don't even have time for the record. I didn't know where I was. That's what Michael Harding does to you. Okay, that's it for this week's Sunday Roast. Thanks to all my guests and, of course, to you for listening. Thanks also to the Sunday Roast team, senior producer Patrick Haughey, producer Ruth Duvani and Stephen McClune on sound. If you want to listen back to the show, you'll find it all on todayfm.com. I'll put that aha unplugged stuff up on our page on todayfm.com. It's really well worth watching. And I'll be back tomorrow morning, as usual, on Ian Dempsey's Breakfast Show here on Today FM. And I'm also out on tour again, would you believe, just after Christmas. Mario In Your Face is the name of my show, and we've updated the show. So it's going around all of Ireland, Galway, Dublin, Cork, Kilkenny, Kerry, Mayo. Find it all on ticketmaster.ie at Mario In Your Face, and I would hope to see you there after Christmas. Anyway, have a great week. Talk to you later.
Mario Sunday Roast on Today FM
with AvantCards.ie. Get Ireland's first made-for-you personal loan rates.